In my inner circle, there are people which have failed straight in a row 10 times in a year. But then there was one project which are running great, and now they formed a win out of it. And the only difference about someone who has much talent, they try it again.
Today we have with us someone who is a radical NLP evangelist and advocate of open source and everything open source, right? He also loves sharing people's passions project and is extremely approachable. He knows how to provide enthusiastic mentoring specifically designed to improve problem solving and known for the modern management and leadership skills. Today we have with us Philip. Welcome to this podcast, Philip.
Hi, I'm a bit overwhelmed about this introduction. It's about me.
Yes.
And one question, what's the part about being radical in terms of open source to spread the love for open source?
Yeah, absolutely. the cool. Overwhelming posts that we have from you, Philip, if we had to just scroll through all of your feeds and see what's the variety of posts, it'll take maybe a year's worth of time to learn all of it.
Yeah, I keep it as small brain nuggets. It's also working for me to dig in new information and get an idea about the concepts which are using the new paper I'm posting about or the framework. Yeah, and it's often hard. There's so much stuff going on in the open source and in machine learning ecosystems. So it's a challenge to be on track, to know what's going on and to read all the papers and all the stuff and all the frameworks.
Yeah, but that's why we have you. That's why we have you, Philip, for keeping us updated.
And maybe we are sharing some secrets about how to be on track and how to read fast.
Absolutely. Hey, so awesome. So today we have a variety of topics to cover, from ranging from, let's say, building data teams in companies to learning data science fast. So stick around towards the end. We'll have the secret sauce from Philip of how to learn data science fast, and he's going to give his perspective. So that's the last section of this podcast. So stick around and we will hear from Philip on that particular thing. Right now, Philip, we are experiencing something unique in this data science field. We have a rapidly growing network of technologies on one side, and on the other side, there are companies which lead the way to adopt new technologies. However, there is still a gap in adopting new technologies. Where do you think this gap lies, and how companies plan to adopt such rapid changes?
It's not an easy term to be on track in this direction, because there are corporates which are better in leading up and corporates which are failing because their structure is not built for rapid change. The problem of most companies is they do not like to change. So it's always hard to change a corporate, to change the mindset, to change the technology, because people want to use what they are know. And they fight against change. So you need an environment in your corporate which is the foundation of doing change. And if I'm reflected on me personal in a big enterprise corporate, because I joined KPMG to see how enterprise IT is working, and they are doing enterprise IT with all its shadows. It's not only sunny days. There is a flip side of the coin. So one of the biggest problems when we are working in our environment to have a new technology and I want to adopt it, I want that my engineers are using it, they implement it in some solutions. So there is a new technology, we want to absorb it, to have it in our portfolio. And the biggest problem here is overhead. We are fighting overhead, because when your company is growing, it's getting bigger, and you're starting as a small startup and every people in your corporate, and then it's growing and you have 50 people, you have 100 people, you have 200 people, you need processes for integration, because there need rules to implement new technologies. There are also security issues and all the stuff, and different shareholders want to talk about the technology and have their cards in a game. So the biggest issue here for a big corporate is the immense overhead you are producing. On one hand, it's needed, but on the other hand, it's if there is no value add in your overhead, it did not work. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. when I look at me, and that's one part, there, one of the boring parts, you have to play the game in the corporate. You have to do your process management, also people management. And if I'm planning a project, I need a budget plan. And I need this budget plan 6 months, 8 months, 12 months before the real project is starting. And one of the biggest issues here is mm-hmm. I did not know what's going on then in the project. There are so many things going and projects not often run like you are planned at. So I'm sitting there writing down the budget plan. I have to do the people allocation. I have to put which engineers are sitting on the project, and I have to plan it. And then the project starts, and we have all these fancy KPIs and project management frameworks to track how is the success. Did we have our PBIs in place? Did we reach our milestones? But one big issue here is that I know so many projects, and also my projects, most of the time they are green. Yeah, they are running perfect, but that's fake. That's only for the show, because people are smart and people know how to trick the system. They know how to keep their KPIs in green, and every project is green, not in reason because your project management is so good and you're able to look into the future. It's people are smart and they trick the system. And if they know how to trick the system, they will do it. It's always there. You need to save overhead. You question yourself, if it's really what I need, is it mandatory for my project, and get rid of the useless overhead. And useless means if it's only a fake show and you have all your green KPIs, question if it's really necessary to have it in place.
Absolutely. One interesting question I had in mind when you're speaking about this, let's say you make a project plan and it's six months ahead of time and you're allocating the resources. Now you're implementing one technology that now is the best solution, but suddenly midway through, you have things like, let's say, Hugging Face coming in, or let's say Spacey.
I know exactly what you're meaning, because that's one of the problems also in if my team members writing academic papers about a new solution and we're planning and we have to go to university, and then they are writing and it's old. It's already, there is a new model which is 10 times better, which is do the stuff 10 times better than the approach before. So in our environment related to machine learning, it's ultra fast. So you have to be fast. And there are also frameworks to implement fast iterative processes and development. But you need the right mindset. The corporate need the right mindset to implement it. So to be agile, to use Scrum, to have short iterations and feedback loops and invent. And one of my tricks in a big corporate you have no chance. When I look through Rasa or Hugging Face, they are super smart, they are super fast, because they exactly know what they are doing. And we are a big corporate, we have our processes there, and I have to talk to 20, 30 people when we are starting a project and have to do the stakeholder management and people management. I try to have a Poorman's approach. I call it Poorman's approach. It's like a proof of concept. So I say, let's test this technology. I do not all the necessary budget plans because we did not know. I have no idea if it's useful, if we can use it. And then we do the Poorman's approach. And often you over-engineer your products. You need a fast transition of your from development into a real proof of concept with users. So if a user needs a feature, then you see it's necessary and you need it. And if you're missing that part, you are planning feature by feature, and after end, nobody needs it.
Yep, absolutely. So It is tricky. And I think so increasingly, this is constantly going to be a way of life where we now plan for, let's say, new releases or new technologies so that we can adopt them as quickly as possible if we have shorter sprints. That is. So proof of concepts. Nice. Now, basically, now let's now flip the side to the individuals part. Now, as a lead of this project, you are on a spot to do all of these changes, but the team members also equally have to pick themselves up, right? Like, they need to learn how Hugging Face works. They need to integrate it, and they need to also productionize. So, how do your team members react, or let's say, how others can adapt to this situation if they are in the side where they're executing these changes?
So you mean to adapt new technologies fast, to constant learn new stuff?
Yep.
Okay. One of the biggest issue personally with what I have when regarding to new technology, to new knowledge, most of the time people are learning in a wrong direction. They are always tried to put more content into their head. They have a constant stream of new content, but after all, if you're looking into neuroscience, it's not only about your brain need to be in a specific state to adapt new stuff to learn. And most people are overdoing the part with new content in, and they are missing this part where you have to consolidate, where you have to reflect. People need to work with what they learned. So it's the brain, or if we are talking about neuroplasticity, needs to be in the right mood to adapt it. So there's also a popular paper out there. It's called 2010, I think. So you have 20 minutes of strict learning, then a break of 10 minutes to make something else with what you have learned. And it's important. Most also university is doing learning most of the time in a wrong direction. It depends. If you have a good lecture, then it's working. But often they are learning for one big test in the end of the semester, and it's not working. You are not adapting knowledge in this way, because if you're looking there, curriculum is getting bigger, and you have to split it, make it in. You need small chunks, and people need to work with the knowledge to do something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Philip, you brought out a very important point, which often a lot of new learners miss out, right? It's like constant consumption of the information that they have, but very little implementation. So the retention of what you're learning will be very less. And this is something that our learners, or that anyone that is coming to data science, should also consider in mind, that hey, if you learn some concept, whatever small that concept is, you learn to apply it, learn something new, apply it, learn something new, and keep going. And that even if you do less, you're actually doing a lot more than actually just consuming all sorts of information.
And you said it's about the concept. If you get an idea about a concept, it's often pay more back than reading one more paper or one more. You need to understand the concept, how stuff is related together, how it's working. So if we are looking into natural language processing, if you understand how vector spaces are used and how a transformers architecture is working and attention heads, you can cover 80% about the ongoing research in the field.
Absolutely. You also mentioned about one interesting thing, that stakeholder management becomes key when you're trying to adopt new challenges. So can you give us some of your insights or some of the ways that you pick up to do stakeholder management whenever you are trying to inject new technologies or use some new technologies?
Now I share my tricks, how to trick or how to win in a corporate. Okay. My team members are making fun about the thing, because I call it people management. So Philip, me, is there for people management. So my engineers are able to work in what they are good. They are good in programming. They are good in implementing. They are way better than me, because if they are not better than me, then I have done a bad job in hiring them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I try to cover them against this bullshit work so that they can work and do what they are greater in, and Philip will do the people management and try to to make our project a winning project. To
so
a lot of talking.
We need to do. I mean, we need to divide that aspect of people management and doing whoever is doing the best work. Let them do that best work, and also ensure you are doing regular meetings, scheduling regular meetings with the right stakeholders, and ensuring they are comfortable with this new change. And meanwhile, the engineers do their work in the background.
If you're investing the right time there, you are saving immense time and immense work later on. Because if people are in the right mindset and you have covered their, or you gained their trust, they're behind your project and stuff is going a lot easier.
Absolutely. Hey, Philip, another interesting point is, now you spoke about hiring, right? You told me you have to hire the right people to basically run smoothly. Now, there are some data science, there are basically some, you know, enthusiasts, data science enthusiasts who wants to move into data science. Let's say they are 5 years or let's say 10 years experience. And for them particularly, if they may not know data science as much as anybody who is actually practicing. If they are hiring, what should they keep in mind? What do you keep in mind while you're hiring somebody into the team?
You talk about the process, how to find the right person.
Yeah, the right person. If imagine you're interviewing somebody, and what are those aspects or the qualities you're looking in that person to hire?
It's something which is constant change, because back in the days we are covering all these interview questions, how to solve this and this, but it's changing. Most of the time now I'm talking about show me your projects, your side projects, what you have worked on, what's your interest there, why you implement this in this way and not in other way, and then show me what's your field of interest. And if a person has the drive to adapt a new technology beside their work because they want to work with us, they're interested in the field, and they implement some data science project regarding LOL or esports events. And it's about how the architecture, how you implement it. So let's look into the GitHub repository, and maybe we have a small talk, maybe we're going much more in detail. Yeah. I did not trust in university degrees anymore, because it's lifelong learning. And if you have a record of constant learning, it depends on which degree and what kind of stuff you're looking. But most of the time I did not trust anymore in university degrees.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have seen people which have bad degrees in university and are high flyers in their job because they have the right passion.
Absolutely, absolutely. And echo your feelings on looking at GitHub repository. I look at how often they commit, what are the nature of projects they have there.
But don't let you trick. There are bots for implementation for constant.
I'm also learning, you know. My neural net is always constantly learning and picking out where to look and where not to look. Okay, absolutely. Now, you have mentioned many folks, both in your company and outside through LinkedIn, people like me take time to read and what you write. And a lot of people are learning from what you do all of on LinkedIn, right? And you have started that, and it is now going in many directions, people reaching out to you to tell you like, hey, can you make this post and all of that thing. That aspect, on the LinkedIn aspect, like where did you when did you start posting these things, and like how it is now evolving in terms of putting content on LinkedIn?
In the time before I put it on LinkedIn, I put it into our internal team chats, and I'm shooting all out of my team, and they have. And then I'm asking, did you read it? Did you check it? Is there an opportunity? And now it's more public. So I do it on LinkedIn. But the idea behind it is I'm also reading. Because if there is a new paper, I do my fast reading and try to understand what's in there. And it's a constant stream of little chunks. And with this little chunks, you're also able to keep track. You, okay, there is a new approach and about the approach. You haven't implemented, but you have an idea in which direction it's going.
It's indexing the knowledge basically so that when that problem comes in, you can quickly go and index on that or go deep and learn and implement.
And I'm also have, it's related to, so I have the constant track of new stuff going on, new papers I'm reading, and then I prepare my backlog. But it's a problem of optimal stopping. You have the time where you are exploring, you look what's there, and then you have keep your backlog and see, okay, there I have to do the deep dive and have to look in detail to understand what's going on there. But before you are there, you need to understand what's the baseline for the market.
Absolutely. So you basically build a baseline model and then you do hyperparameter optimization to know where you're actually quitting.
And you can waste a lot of time in optimization. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. Learning, you're known for propagating that problem solving aptitude in a lot of people, the attitude. Like learning technology is one side. How problem solving skills are by large missing both for new learners, even some learners that are there currently. You know, what focus should the new data science learners or this age of mentors focus on, right? Teaching technology is okay, but what the data science mentor should think about approaching how they can transfer this knowledge of problem solving?
First of all, if you are not the mentor, you're the learner. Don't trust people which are saying, go into data science in 2 months, in 1 month, do the fast track. It's bullshit. It's always hard work. If you want a good data scientist, sorry, it's hard work. You have to be patient. You need resilience. You need to be stress resistant because most of the time it's not working and you have to figure it out and it takes a lot of time and you have a big backlog of more stuff going on and you're sitting there and your code is not running and you have no idea why. So then you're digging to Stack Overflow and hopefully find the thread where someone has also asked the question. So the most important skill to get into the field, if it's machine learning, it's data engineering, it's data science, resilience. You need to be resilient in reason of stress because it's a hard way. You fail often and you fail many times. If I'm looking at my history, I failed a lot. I failed in school, I failed in university, I failed in running a business. And I see a lot of very talented people. They have so many talent, but the biggest problem there is they are not successful in their life because they have not learned to, if you fail, okay, do your notes, do your records, and then try it better next time. And you have to stand up and go over it and try again. And then you can form this failure into a win. And I see often people are not stress resistant. They, damn, I give up. That's all. And they only tried once.
And yep.
So patient. Yeah.
And resilient also.
Yeah.
So I read this quote somewhere. If you want to double your chances of success, if you want to succeed, you need to double your chances of failure. It's somewhere. Right. So you need to constantly fail.
In my inner circle, there are people which have failed straight in a row 10 times in a year. But then there was one project which are running great. And now they formed a win out of it. And the only difference about someone who has much talent, they try it again. They are running and going over and do it again.
Absolutely. Basically, you are just constantly teaching how your brain to be very comfortable with being ambiguous. You don't have to have a fear of failure. You know, you have to be comfortable failing a lot. And then obviously, all of this topping, you need to be resilient also. These are some of the qualities the mentor should impart to the new students, and the students adopting these aspects will definitely be help them. Okay, now we will do something fun, Philip, with you. And this is a rapid fire round. So whatever your answer is, you can give us quickly. If you want to give a reason behind why you're choosing that answer, you're open to do it. So this is the rapid fire round for this particular podcast. And I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Okay, so here goes the first question. What do you prefer, learning by error or learning without error?
We have a by error. You have to fail.
Yeah. The interesting thing about some of the things that we saw see in Stack Overflow is that the most common questions will have, let's say, 200K views or something like that. But if you go towards the more critical questions, you'll see that the views on them will reduce. Like you'll have 5,000, 2,000 views on them. So we actually know that, okay, the common questions a lot of people are asking, but not all of them are actually taking the entire journey to the most critical questions.
Yeah. Most of the times there are beginner questions there. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Batman versus Superman.
Batman, where shutter is, if there is light, you need shutter.
Absolutely. Do you prefer Plural Site or Udemy or any other platform?
It's independent because it depends on the course, and yeah, it's related. Okay. You have good courses on Plural Site. You have good courses also on Udemy. But one life hack, don't buy your Udemy course for the normal price. There's always, and say they have individual prices. If you're looking on Udemy, you see different prices than me. And if you're looking for a course, wait 3 days or 4 days, and boom, there is a sale. And you got a full course for $10.
So you have a Black Friday every 3 days.
Yes, for sure. Don't let me trick from Udemy. There's always a sale. Wait for the sale.
Yeah, and somehow they have figured out how to make money out of this system. Okay, where do you find your continuous stream of posts for LinkedIn?
It's a horrible self-built deck. Also, I have fixed places where I look. So I look through new NLP papers. The best option here, if you are new in the field, is to look for the right influencers, for the right people, because they are filtering what's important for you and take their stream. And there are good machine learning input streams on Twitter, which are very good if you are new to the field. So you see what's going on and you can dig it from there. When I look into my process, I have all, it's Redis pipelines with Kafka. It's a data engineer enterprise stack. Also with machine learning pipelines to do a pre-selection and the pre-processing for me to be faster. It's grown over the years. And from there, sometimes it's not running because I have to fix something there and I have not the time to fix it. So depends. But my best place to go is Twitter and LinkedIn. Look for the right people there, and they have incredible content. They do a lot of, they put time into it to filter it for you, to pre-process it for you. Yeah. Maybe we need some kind of new format for influencers recommendation.
Absolutely. There should be a platform. Okay. Do you use any kind of scheduler for posting on LinkedIn, or do you just do it manually?
I tried Hootsuite and some other platform, but LinkedIn is trying to cover their platform from automation tools. So they want to be the gatekeeper, which automation tool is working. And most of the time, they are not where you pay money for something which is not really working. It's poor in implementation. You did not get the insights. And the problem there is you have pre-processed your post and you want to that it's posted on a fixed time. And then you're looking into it after it's posted there and there are errors, mistakes, nope. And I tried, but if you're looking onto my post pattern, you see it's most of the time before work and after work. And
okay.
At the moment, they're all handwritten.
Okay.
For Thank LinkedIn.
You. Absolutely. Do you hire through LinkedIn?
Yes.
What is your favorite mind mapping tool and why should data science folks use mind mapping tools?
I tried different one. At the moment, I'm using XMind. Why? Because the human brain is not working like an index database, like a SQL database. It's working more like a graph database. Knowledge is related and connected. So a mind map is a good entry point for to have a structure about your concepts. Yeah.
Absolutely. So are you an early morning person or a late night person?
It changed. At the time where I was younger, I was a late night guy. And now I'm not able to sleep longer than 6. So I'm awake and then go to post on LinkedIn. But yeah, it's because I'm getting old. I don't know why.
Probably it has to do with maybe it has become so resilient on so many topics.
Maybe.
Okay. Now, now here's the part. Thank you for all of the answers on the rapid fire round, Philip. Now, here's the part where all of our participant wants to know the million-dollar question. Right. How do you get into data science? But before answering these questions, could you start by answering the mindset required to get into data science and then give us how to get into that data science?
Don't give up. Try. I'm also sitting there and Googling how to load a CSV file into a Panda data frame. Or how many times I'm looking for syntax or for implementations, stuff I have done million times. Don't give up. Everyone has its challenge there and keep trying.
Absolutely. So don't give up, keep trying. Resilient mind and learn through errors. Failure, keep failing so that all of these aspects build up to that mindset. And so now we basically come to that aspect where all of us want to hear on how do you learn data science in 3 months?
The most famous $1 million question.
Yes.
If you want to be faster than others, try to learn by the mistakes from your peer group, from your team members. So build a team. And if you're working with what you have learned, you understand the concept better. So build teams, go into a place like the co-learning lounge and learn with people on the same topic. It's like university in an online format. So, and there you have the chance to learn from your peer group, from also if there is a mentor or a teacher, that's how you adapt new knowledge.
Absolutely, absolutely. And can you, just adding to this particular thing, can you give us a sneak peek into how you learn a new concept, right? Can you take a recent example or a concept that you learned and can you break down that process for our learners?
To learn fast, you have to work with the knowledge in different aspects. So depends on what I try to learn. Best part here is if I'm implementing it, because if I have to implement, I have to have an understanding about the core concept, what's going on there. But I work with many tools and everything is allowed. So you can do a mind map to understand the structure of a topic. You can go there and have a podcast or also viewing a YouTube video, which a person is explaining a paper. It's a constant stream. And use every tool you have because you have different time or different quality of time. So you have time early in the morning, you have 3 or 4 hours where you are able to do hard work, to think about stuff and digging deep. And then if it's later in the day, you have the part where you are chilling in your bed and maybe you're able to watch a YouTube video. And if it's connected, so you have the part about the implementation and your deep digging and deep stuff in the morning, and then later in the day, some easy, snackable knowledge, mm-hmm. but it's related. So you're using your time dependent on if you're able to go deep and have the energy
Yep, absolutely. And thank you, Philip, for giving us all of these aspects. And you've already heard what is the mindset that you need to have about resilience, not having, being very comfortable with failing and keep going. You will get through in the data science field. That's some of the things. Another important aspect which he just mentioned is that you need to put in, let's say, a solid 2-3 hours on that topic for uninterrupted. And then throughout the day, if you're not getting that concept, have some snackable moments on YouTube or an article, or you augment that thing, and you will ultimately find that particular solution so that you can put in another 2 hours the next day, and then that's how you make progress.
And I have also this momentum. You're sitting there and have an implementation, and you're not stopping because I want to understand it. I want to implement it, but it's not working. So you're sitting there. It's getting late and it's not working. So then you go to sleep, wake up and have this momentum. Why I haven't tried this way? And next day, with refreshed mind, everything is skyrocketing. Not every time, sometimes.
Absolutely. So with this, Philip, we are at the end of the podcast, and we wanted to thank you for giving us all of these insights from teams, how to work with teams in corporates, to having a mindset, learning new things, implementing, and also how to learn quickly, how to learn data science quickly. Also, the last thing that we want from you is, what advice do you have for co-learning launch?
In which direction?
To learning and how we can do things differently to promote more learners.
It's a tricky question because it's in a field where you can do so many good stuff, because learning is often in a wrong direction, as I said. So have content in different forms and try to get the people where they are. If it's early in the morning, they need to implement, they need to reflect, they need to work with the knowledge. And then you have different formats of knowledge. You have your podcast, you have your YouTube videos, and then you are in a good direction.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Philip. And thank you for coming on our podcast also.